I've destroyed relationships for the last decade. Everybody knows I'm a deadbeat. Everybody knows I'm a degenerate gambler. I'm going to tell you, you're going to die if you keep it up. Because the rate is 10x higher than any other addiction. You're eventually going to rob something because you're going to run out of money and you're going to go to jail. Or number three, your brain can't handle this and it's going to snap.
In today's video, Eddie shares his story of gambling addiction and recovering. This video is from a Right Choice Recovery speaking event that happened recently. But before we dive into that, I want to just ask for one thing. So many of you regularly watch this channel, but aren't yet subscribed. What are you waiting for? Hit that subscribe button, and my promise to you is that I will continue to do everything that I can to spread awareness about gambling addiction.
Society, the way your brain is trained, the way everything's going on in your life, you're thinking the opposite. You're thinking I'm scarlet marked. People know. I used to think the same thing. At 39 years old, I was on a plane heading to rehab, and I remember saying, I can't believe it. What are people going to think? I didn't think about the 20 years leading up to that and every relationship I destroyed, everybody I borrowed money from, how I couldn't hold a steady job down, how I basically destroyed everybody. I was like a virus. I didn't care about that. I cared about what we thought. And I, to this day, it's even amplified and worse, and I feel bad for you guys because of social media. Because social media actually gave you a platform to think your opinion actually means something. It's fucking comical. Your opinion means nothing. You're not going to influence. Someone's going to wake up and all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to vote this way or I'm going to do this. It means nothing. And that's okay. And that's okay. So you're right where you're supposed to be. In 2015, they estimated about 3 million compulsive gamblers, closet, who weren't. That was in 15. That number has tripled. It took 10 million people. Think about what you're fighting against just on that number alone. It's easy. The path that's easier to take is just to have a case of the fuckets and walk out the door and say, you know what, I'm done. I'm done. I figured I've destroyed my life, and I'm just going to kind of do my thing. And what I'm coming to tell you is, God's strange like that, and gambling's really weird, and addiction's weird like that, because it's not going to kill you fast, it's going to kill you slow. And the worst thing I see about people who go through a program is your brain can't handle both things. It can't handle life on life's terms, and it can't handle addiction. So at best, and I talk about this a lot for the guys who come to our rooms, your ceiling is mediocrity, and that's the saddest part. You'll never know any potential in your life. Your ceiling's mediocre, you can't. You can't do both. It's impossible. So you have to give up one. So I'm here to tell you today, you're either going to give up on life or you're going to give up gambling. And that's okay. And that's okay. It is. It's okay. And my story is not different than anybody else's. You don't have to be Sigmund Freud to figure out why I gambled. It's pretty simple. My dad was thrown out of my house when I was 2 years old. He was a compulsive gambler. He was a cheater. He showed up at my house in Christmas time, begged my mom to come back, and showed up in his girlfriend's car with a Christmas tree. That's what I came from. And that's what I came from in the 70s when it really wasn't acceptable. Now you can get a divorce faster than you can close on a house. Back then it just didn't happen. You kept your problems behind closed doors and it was what it was. So I always felt weird. There was always this void inside of me. And it gave me the ability to misdirect, to re-guide, because I didn't want the focus on me. I wanted to focus everywhere else because in my mind, I was really insecure about my family setup. I had an overbearing mom. I had a dad who gave two shits about me. And it was just a really odd way to grow up and to live. So if you look at it, if you want to connect the dots psychologically, I was destined to fail somewhere along the line. I was literally destined to self-destruct. And I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the capabilities. I didn't have the support system. I didn't have the people. I didn't have the community around me to walk me through the righteous path. So I kind of got by. I got by on everything, and it's amazing. I gambled at one point in my life like a normal person, and I did that when I was in therapy because when I was about 25, 26 years old, I started to take life seriously, and I got into hardcore therapy about the things I went through. And I could do an office football pool back then. I can bet on a game and not look back. It's only when I got away from the things that kept me on the righteous path did I self-destruct. My life's in shambles. My truck was repossessed for the third time. My house is in foreclosure. I burned through every penny of my savings. I was a sports bettor, by the way. It's pretty much all I bet on. I bet with money I didn't have. I robbed Peter to pay Paul. I had no relationships. I had no connections. My connection with you is to size you up to see what I can get with you. That was the challenge. That was the endorphin rush I was looking for. That, to me, was as fun as gambling. Because I'd lose. And let's be honest, all we're looking for is that rush, that dopamine push. That's it. And it didn't. The funny thing about it is, when you really break it down and read into it, whether you lose or you win, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to a gambler. We're just looking for that high, and you continue to chase the dragon. So I didn't have any sustainable relationships. My marriage was on the rocks. My wife was, I could tell, had enough, but we had an 11-month-old, the only thing that probably saved my marriage. And I remember, and I talk about this often, like when I needed a miracle. I needed something to happen, something to change, and I had no idea how I was going to do it. And on February 25th, I went 0 for that day, lost another $10,000, and I said to myself, I don't know what to do. My wife is teaching a yoga class. I went on my back deck. I was living in Belmar, New Jersey at the time, and I prayed to God for the first time. Please, drop a plane in my head. Do something, anything. I don't care. Just help me, help me. And I woke up the next day, and like every other degenerate gambler I know, I made all those promises and lies. What I say to myself, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to call my bookies. I'm going to close the lines. I'm going to do all this stuff. And I didn't have the courage or conviction to do any of it. The Wednesday came. I made believe I was going to work. I was sitting down by the beach about 5 blocks from my house. And I remember just staring out at the ocean like, what am I going to do? I have no way out of this. And the phone rang, and my wife said a pipe burst and asked me to come home, and I walked into my intervention. To this day, when people ask me if there are miracles in this program, that was one. I mean, I was staring at 12 people who saw something in me I couldn't see in myself, and I apologize. And I remember saying to myself, I'm going to put forth 110% in recovery. It sounds stupid. It sounds really stupid. I'm literally going to put the effort into recovery that I did gambling, and I'm going to see how this thing shakes out. Which takes me to that part when I was flying. And then in the back of my head, I was saying to myself, I can't believe this. What are people going to think? And then I giggled. I thought to myself, oh, my God, I've destroyed relationships for the last decade. Everybody knows I'm a deadbeat. Everybody knows I'm a degenerate gambler. Who am I hiding from? Who am I hiding from? And I met my sponsor, who's going to be on a call, I believe, later, Arnie W., down at rehab. And I just remember saying to him, like, he's like, I'm impressed. I was on the phone with you this morning. You're on it. You're here tonight. You're going to be okay. And he said those magic words to me, which I just replayed to you. You're right where you're supposed to be. And it's really important. You're right where you're supposed to be. So as you go through your evolution in this program, and you leave outpatient, and you start to find your homeroom, and your group, and your community, call it, it's going to be vital. It's probably the most important part of your recovery. Listen, recovery is individual, 100%. But Rob, Adam, guys, Pete, guys, we have a social responsibility in the rooms to make it comfortable, to make it an environment that's giving, that's welcome, that's stern. You're gonna get told at times what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, but it's going to be a loving group. It's going to be groups of people who are here for your best interest, who are not going to judge you. So it's really important. And it leads me back, and I studied a lot of psychology of gambling and a lot of psychology of addiction. And there was a guy in the 70s, his name was Dr. Bruce Alexander, and he talks about this a lot. He ran an experiment called Rat Park. And rat, basically, they did drug experiments on rats where they'd have a rat and they put him in an isolated spot, and they would have a bottle filled with water and a bottle filled with heroin-laced water. And inevitably, the rat found the heroin-laced water. He would go nuts and eventually die of addiction. So Alexander looked at it and said, well, he's isolated. He's by himself. He's alone, hence gambling. He's addicted. What if we added some stuff to this? Let's add stimulus. Let's put 3 or 4 floors. Let's add balls. Let's add endless amounts of cheese. Let's build a rat haven. Let's get other rats in there so they can commune. Let's build an environment for these rats. And the most amazing thing happened. The addiction went from 100% suicide rate to where they would drink themselves to death to zero. And the rats actually adapted to the older ones only using the heroin-laced bottles when they were in pain. So they knew exactly what to do. And it's rats. I get it. I understand. Like, how could you compare rats to humans? But at the same time, simultaneously, the biggest human experiment that we studied ever was happening at that time. It was called the Vietnam War. 20% of our soldiers were addicted to heroin. 20. And they did blocks of it, tons of it. And we were worried as a society, they're going to come back and our whole world is going to be basically walking zombies. And they're going to push this on agenda. And what they found out is 95% of those people never picked up again. They didn't go to rehab. They didn't go to meetings. They were accepted from the most extreme, excruciating conditions, worrying if they were going to die and doing something to ease the pain, to a loving home, to somewhere where they got support, to somewhere where they got what they needed. and they didn't need to pick up. And that's the most important part about this, about meetings, about going. And when you hear us constantly say, meetings make it, you have to go. You got to go find your tribe. You got to find your group. It's really important. It's vitally important, because what's going to happen is you're then going to gravitate to people in the program, and you're going to create these little hives within. Rob and I created a hive 12 years ago. We've been connected at the hip since. I can say that for about five or six guys. Now, we don't isolate anybody out. We just have a different relationship internally in the program, and you need that support. Again, this isn't something we need to go through alone. It's not. It never will be. It's super, super, super important. So I want to drive that point home to you guys. When you get out, go to as many meetings as you can, and then you find it. And rooms have energy. Don't kid yourself. Rooms have energy. There are rooms I'll never go back into. I got back from rehab. The first meeting I went to was Edison. And I'm not knocking the Edison room. I'm sure it's great. But I walked in there, and a 500-pound guy with a thing up his nose because he couldn't breathe, was barely walked, sat down. My first comment to me was, time to be a man and put your fucking big boy pants on. What I wanted to do was dive over the table and smash him to death with that tank. What I did was nothing. I bit my tongue and said, I'm never coming to this room again. And then I went to Monday, and then I went to Tuesday, and I did what was asked of me. I was asked to do 90 meetings in 90 days. I did 106.
Struggling with an addiction can make you feel like you're all alone. But you don't have to do this by yourself. At Bright Choice Recovery, a family-owned and operated treatment center in New Jersey, we're here for you. And we are dedicated to helping you break free from addiction and reclaim your life. Whether you're struggling with substances or a gambling addiction, this is the spot for you. With personalized care, real support, and a team that truly understands, we're here to walk with you on this journey to recovery. Because recovery is possible, and it all starts with the right choice. Check us out today, because your future is worth fighting for.
And then my recovery hit a point where I needed to give back. I plateaued. You're going to plateau in everything in life. You're going to plateau. And then I needed to take the next step. So I got deep into psychology on why I tick, on why I do what I do, how I can put up extra safe rails. Because when I was in action, I was a lunatic. I was one of those high-strung, high-pressure guys. A car cut me off one time when I was in the throes of gambling about 6 months before I went to rehab. And I chased him three towns down. And chased him into his house in Homedale, and I forgot my son was in the backseat. He was 4 months old. Totally forgot. Completely blacked out. Doing 100 miles an hour up Route 35, I was trying to kill a guy. That's where I was. This disease turned me into an animal. Do I think I'm an animal? No. I think I'm a good person with a really bad problem. I also have no illusions that if you don't take this seriously, I'm not the guy. Let me explain something to you. When you come in the room, I'm not like Tina. I'm not going to tell you it's okay. I'm going to tell you, you're going to fucking die if you keep it up. Because the suicide rate is 10x higher than any other addiction. 10x, number one. Number two, you're eventually going to rob something because you're going to run out of money and you're going to go to jail. Or number three, your brain can't handle this and it's going to snap. So you have three ways out of this. Or you can take the really difficult path, the one loaded with thorns and potholes and setbacks. And that's called recovery. Recovery's not easy. Dude, you're not going to wake up one day and all of a sudden rainbows are going to shoot out of your ass. You're going to look at your bank account. There's going to be $2 million. You're going to look at your wife and she's going to smile and say, I've never been so happy. It doesn't work like that. Recovery is in inches. It's in inches. And it's brutal. And you have to put blinders on. Regardless of setbacks, regardless of anything, you have to literally galvanize yourself. And what you've realized listening to people like Rob, I'm sure listening to people like Meg, eventually you got to silence the critics. You got to listen to people. Which brings me to my last point for the young people. Do the opposite of what you think. Do the opposite of what you think early on. What you think got you into got you into a shitload of trouble, got you here. Your new thinking will keep you here. Your new thinking will have you change the way you view recovery. You can view recovery rose-covered glasses. You have an opportunity. You have a window, a small window, an opportunity in life right now to change the course of your life. People can't say that. You look at this as bad. I look at this as you as being chosen. You're chosen. You don't realize that, like myself, Rob, his wife, we have an obligation. We have a duty to carry a torch once we're done. We have to. I'd be doing this program a complete disservice if I didn't get in a car and go to someone's house, if I didn't put this message on LinkedIn recently and get two people to inbox me who I never knew had a problem, having a problem, and helping them get help. I do it all. Like these are, if you show your vulnerability, if you wear it on your sleeve, You're going to give someone else the opportunity to drop their guard and really let you know what's going on in life. And I could see it. I look around the room. I could tell who's in pain and who's not. And that's okay. It's okay. Good news. I got news for you. You're going through life now feeling feelings. You're going through life with pain. You're going through life with ups and downs. That's the way you're supposed to feel. Gambling made me numb. I didn't give a shit about anything. I had two things. I had neutral and angry. Neutral, I was never happy. Gambling never made me happy. No addiction will ever make you happy. It'll subside you. It'll help you pass time. But you're never going to be fulfilled. There's nothing fulfilling. The gifts that gambling gave me, I got to forgive my dad when my grandmother died. 4 years into the program, I went to my grandmother's funeral, and I remember driving up there. It's probably the time I crossed over from into true recovery. I remember driving to my grandmother's funeral in Bayonne, New Jersey, and saying to myself, oh, my God, if he says anything, I'm going to fucking throw the coffin at him. Like, I'm going to punch him in the face. And as I was walking into the church, a little voice in the back of my head said, honor your grandmother. Remember, it's his mother. This is about her. Put your bullshit aside. I don't talk in my head. Okay. Listen to that little intuition. And I made him feel really comfortable. I made it seem like him and I didn't skip a beat purposely because I didn't want to put him in a really precarious spot. And the next day at the repast, he came up to me and asked me for a business card. He said, I want to call you. I want to get my shit together. Sure, handed him a card. The phone hasn't rang yet. And that was over 10 years ago. I didn't expect it to ring. But I cried my eyes out the whole way home. And everybody thought it was honor my grandmother. No, it was the albatross. It was the thing that probably put me in the position I'm in. I got to let it go. When you have issues and you have problems and you're afraid to talk about it, get them out there. Talk about anything. Put it in the ether. Once it's gone, it can't hurt you. It's over. You've exposed what it is. You're going to be someone else's news 6 months from now. So who gives a flying fuck if you're in rehab? Who cares? Who cares? You're taking strides to better your life. How is that a bad thing? What has gambling brought to anyone? Any of your degenerate friends, take a look at them. Do they look happy? No, they're miserable. Casinos are fun places. They're disgusting. There's no windows on them for a reason. They're awful. There's nothing. There's no joy you're going to get. What, a false relationship with some dealer or some host because they comp your room because you lost your life savings? That's fun? There's no fun. There's no joy in it. You need to reconnect and find joy in things. Find joy in life. Find joy in simple stuff. Get into, you want to get addicted to something? Get into addicted to fitness. Get addicted into eating right. Get addicted into your career. Get addicted into the things you need in life, not the things you want. And I know you want gambling, but it drives me crazy when I hear people come in and say they miss gambling. Saying, I got a tumor cut out. I miss cancer. Oh, I miss it. It didn't eat me alive completely, but I really miss it. It's done nothing for you. Gambling is a virus. It's a virus. And to the gentleman who runs Rob's social media, you're right. 18% of all commercials now on ESPN are about gambling, about how you can start $200 in bets for just $5. That's how they hook you. That's how they hook you. So I expect this room to grow exponentially. I expect you to own this whole plaza eventually because there's a need and there's a want. But you got to want this. You really do. This is going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. So when I repeat to you, do the opposite of what you think. There are going to be setbacks. You don't get to throw your hands in the air and say, oh, that's it, I tried, and that's it. That's bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. You're going to go through the most difficult yet the most rewarding process you've ever gone through, and it's called recovery. And it's going to solidify everything in your life. Every relationship you have is going to get better. You're going to be a better employee. You're going to be a better husband. You're going to be a better father. You're going to be a better wife. You're going to be a better partner. You're going to be better at everything in life. So I have this one little thing I can't do. But all this stuff gets better. But if I do this, this balloon pops. All this stuff goes away. So I implore you, is it worth it? I'm not going to be the linebacker for the New York Giants. And I can't gamble. Those are two things I can't do. And I'm okay with it. You should be okay with it too. There's nothing there for you. There's a whole life. And I'm telling you, when you're in it, when you're in the mix and in the thick of things, and your head's flipping around like a million Rolexes, you can't see it. Nor should you. What you need to do is go to as many meetings as possible early on, get to a foundation, find the rooms you want to go to, the ones you know you're going to regularly repeat. Build a community, because community is so important in this journey in recovery. It really is. It's the most important, in my opinion, my humble opinion. They say it's individual. I think that's total bullshit. And I don't use the word, if you hear me, when I announce myself, I say I'm powerless of a gambler and I haven't gambled since February 27, 2011. I won't use addiction. I won't use compulsive. It's my thing. It's the way I interpret life, because I don't believe in the word addiction. I believe in bonding. I think you have a bonding issue. I think you bond to things. I think if you're given a choice, you'll bond to things that will give you temporary relief, like gambling, like bad relationships, like abusive relationships, almost in a Stockholm syndrome type way. Or if you learn the righteous way, you'll bond to things that are good, they're difficult, but solid, solidified relationships, recovery. Recovery will seem different to you. I never looked at this as a weakness. That's one thing. I never looked at my recovery as a weakness. There's not one time I walked out of a meeting and said, oh, man, I can't believe it. No, I don't think about money. Money comes and goes. Money's a big deal. You're not gonna make as much as you did. Boo-hoo. You got to work another 5 more years because you screwed up your life. That's fine. But you get to live a good life. You get to have relationships. Like Rob said, with his kids, I have the same relationships with my kids. Same ones. When I go to games, I buy box suites because I can, because I put myself in a position to. But when the games are going on, I'm looking at them. I'm not looking at the game. I'm living vicariously through my children. And I get that rare opportunity that my dad never did. My dad never wanted a relationship. And I never understood that. And I'll end on this. When it comes to family, when it comes to best friends, when it comes to the people you associate with the most, do me one favor. Write a checklist about that person. And then look back and strip the title of dad, mom, uncle, brother, son, father. I don't care. And then say, would I ever associate with this person if they weren't tied to me in blood? Because sometimes you have to walk away from those relationships. People, places, and things. That's why they put people first. And it's okay. That's why it's so important you come here. You go to rooms. You find your community. And I don't necessarily agree with not everybody, because I say that, I implore you. I don't associate with anybody who gambles. I don't want to be around them. I'm okay walking away and being alone because I'm comfortable enough to be alone at that time where I don't have to be exposed to that bullshit. So you're going to realize your true friendships you're going to find in the program. You're going to find a group of your friends that are outside the program who you love, who respect what you do, who understand, hey, man, we're not going to talk about gambling because Mike or Johnny or Sarah's around. Those are the people you want to keep in your life. Everybody else, resist the urges of guilt. Cut them loose. They're no good. They're albatrosses. You don't think I struggle with my dad? My dad lives 2 towns from me. He hops from beach house to beach house. He'll never meet his grandkids. He'll never have a sustainable relationship. And I'm going to be the one collecting the body when they find him slumped over a toilet somewhere. And guess what? His attitude is going to be, well, I'm dead. I don't give a shit. Someone will take care of it. And that was my life. That was what I became. Take a big step back. 11 months in, I had that realization when I asked for help. I realized I became my dad. I became my worst fear. I don't have to be that guy. You don't have to be that woman. You don't have to be that person. You can forge your own way. You can cut the chains and break the cycle of family shit that's happening that got you here. And there's something traumatic. 85, 90% of guys I talk to, my first relationship is, how's your relationship with your dad? Every one of them is like, oh, yeah, oh, he's not around, or, oh, he's brutal, oh, he's a gambler. Oh, there's always something, and that's okay. That's okay. Mine walked out. I'm glad he did. And I got the opportunity to be the person I always wanted to be, and that's what recovery did for me. Recovery broke me down, broke me apart. And little by little, I got to rebuild myself into the person I always wanted to be.